I've made mention of the fact many times that I feel a big gap in our programming, and I think that's true of the media generally, as well as me specifically, is not having enough of the human face of the COVID-19. We don't speak often enough to people who've survived it about their experience of going through it, particularly those that need to go into a high care, critical care ward. The couple of emails that I read out from people last week who were reflecting on loved ones that they had lost to COVID-19. These things are very important to do. And that applies as well, I think, to the people who are on the front line, the orderlies, the nurses, the doctors. We chat now to Dr. Adam Barnes, who's an ER doctor recovering at home, because, Adam, good afternoon to you. Working as an ER doctor in a time of COVID-19 kind of guarantees you're going to be infected yourself.
Yeah, good afternoon, John. Absolutely. I think right at the beginning of the crisis, we all expected that it was going to happen at some stage, and I'm one of the lucky ones that has got COVID now, but I'm surviving. So I've got mild symptoms, so I'm pretty happy just sitting at home waiting out my 14 days until I can go back to work.
I suspect, Adam, that you're not happy, that you'd prefer to be back working and making a difference.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so it's quite stressful to sit at home and get all of the WhatsApp messages from colleagues who are, I think, in the thick of it now. And I feel a little bit useless to be sat here with a lost sense of smell and taste, waiting for the days to pass. But yeah, I'll get back this time next week. I should be back, so that's good news.
Is that your primary symptom, the loss of smell and taste?
Yeah, so really that's my only symptom. I was sitting at work doing a night shift and chatting to some of my colleagues, and I was drinking coffee, and I couldn't taste my coffee. And I'm sure you can imagine that's quite frightening and disappointing. So I asked the lab technician who was there to quickly swab me, and the next morning I found out that I was in fact diagnosed myself with COVID, and I took myself out of the unit, and I'm sitting at home now.
What's the percentage of people with whom you work, medical frontline people with whom you work, have got, I'm not sure, I suspect you haven't been keeping a tally, but just off the top of your head, is it a lot of your colleagues have tested positive?
It's not actually that many. So I work in a hospital where we're doing random testing, and so far so good. We seem to be avoiding it, but I'm the first doctor in my emergency department that has it, but there have been a few specialists and a few nurses, particularly in the ICUs and the high cares, that have it. But percentage-wise, I would be lying if I said I knew, but it's not too high at this stage, but like I said, we're kind of expecting it to get a little bit higher in the next few weeks.
What's the experience like? I mean, I presume, I know that you're speaking to us from Gauteng, and in the last couple of weeks there really has been a rapid movement upwards of the number of positive cases. Have you been working in an environment where, you know, it's kind of like the TV pictures that we saw out of Spain and Italy, or not as bad as that, worse than that?
Not as bad. So it really depends on the unit that you're in. I work in quite a few different private emergency rooms. And it depends how the hospitals have decided to attack the pandemic. When we started, it was a lot calmer, and I think we were all sitting there waiting for those Italian scenes to play out in front of us. I don't think it's got there yet. But that's probably for a few different reasons. We don't have those kind of facilities in South Africa. We don't have the giant PPE suits, and we're not really using them. It's getting worse, and it's getting a little bit frightening to be one of the people facing it daily.
You really hope that you have immunity and it lasts a while, I guess.
No, absolutely. So most of us joked at the beginning saying we should probably just get this and hopefully get a mild version and move on with our lives. But now we're finding out that that might not be a sure thing, a surefire way to avoid getting it a second time. So we have to wait and see, I suppose.
People who do the sort of work that you do, I've tried to get them to fess up about what it's really like. And there's a kind of understandable instinct to not put yourself forward as somebody who's doing something heroic. You're just a doctor working in emergency rooms, doing what doctors are supposed to do in emergency rooms. But try and give us some sense of this, the stresses and strains and the kinds of things that you have to deal with.
So I think for us, the biggest stress is dealing with something we're not entirely, sure most doctors won't want to say it, but not entirely comfortable with dealing with it. We don't have a treatment for COVID. That's the bottom line. We know how to manage the symptoms. And having patients come in who are what we call undifferentiated, so we don't know a diagnosis yet, and potentially having someone who's having a heart attack versus someone who is suffering from COVID and not knowing whether or not they have COVID, really, it's quite a stressful environment to work with so many unknowns, especially an unknown that, you know, can potentially affect you and your colleagues, and also potentially take it home to your families, which is another stressful thing we're all dealing with.
And I imagine the patients, those that come in with a suspicion or, an almost conviction that they have COVID-19, it must be difficult to calm them, because if you're going into an ER room and you think you have COVID-19 or you're sure you have COVID-19, you don't know whether you are going to be mildly symptomatic or whether you're going to be somebody who spends a week in hospital, then goes out and maybe spends 3-4 weeks, because the post-hospitalization recovery phase, I think we're learning, is very long and very difficult for a lot of patients. Or maybe you're one of those people that might have to be intubated, and then perhaps you have the statistic in your head that only 20% of those survive. So it can't be easy dealing with patients as well.
No, absolutely. And there's an expectation from patients, especially I think in South Africa's private sector, that the facilities are there because they pay for them, and they have an absolute right to those facilities and to get the access to the care that they've got from us always. But we do end up with a situation where you unfortunately have to say to some of the patients, look, you are positive, you've got COVID, but we don't have the capability or capacity to admit you, where previously we may have admitted you for oxygen therapy. You just don't meet our criteria anymore. And I think that adds to the frustration and the fear that the patients are experiencing when they come to us. And there's really no easy answer to that. We can't do anything to change the situation. It's a pandemic.
But you're going back, and you want to go back, and you want to continue doing this, because that's what you do.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I don't know any doctor that got into this career who wouldn't want to be at the front lines at the moment. So I know a lot of people who don't work in emergency medicine who have volunteered and who want to come and help us, because we're expecting it to get a lot worse before it gets better.
Dr. Adam Barnes, thank you very much indeed for talking to us this afternoon.